I want to introduce our next part of the program here. I think it's something you'll find really, really interesting and really unique. And it's the product primarily of two guys, Carlos Pena and Perry Husband. Let me tell you a little bit about Perry first. Perry is the architect and really the person who first began talking about, many years ago, by the way, the concept of effective velocity. Effective velocity, as many of you know, is a location-adjusted way of measuring true velocity of a pitch. It adjusts the raw velocity, but it also incorporates into it the concept of tunneling. And tunneling has, of course, gotten a lot of play in the last couple of years. It's become much more popularized. But you have to know that Perry was talking about this more than a decade ago and was there at the very beginning. He back to his playing days, he had a minor league career, but he also was at Cal State Northridge when they won the national championship, and he was the MVP of the national championship or of the tournament. And today he's been involved in coaching and mentoring and helping develop young talent in the game, both on the pitching and the hitting side. Carlos Pena, who actually worked very closely with Perry during his major league career at different points in time, and he can talk a little bit about that. Carlos, as you know, is now an analyst at MLB Network, but had a lengthy career with the Tampa Bay Rays, I think, who many of us think of him as, but he also played with the Cubs, the Red Sox, and a number of Houston, and a number of other teams over the tail end of his career. Was the co-home run champion in 2009 with 39 homers, but had a 46 home run year 2 years earlier when he was at Tampa, when the same year Alex Rodriguez, I think, hit 54, so he didn't win the title that year. He worked with Perry to really understand from a hitting standpoint this concept of effective velocity, and it was really transformational for Carlos. So Carlos is going to lead this presentation, and perhaps a color commentary by me and Perry at different times. And by the way, you might remember Perry if you were at this conference maybe 3 years ago when he came and made a lengthy presentation on effective velocity. But today, Carlos is going to take the podium and talk about a concept that he and Perry created together called liquid analytics. And I won't try to describe it anymore. I'll leave that to Carlos. But I think you'll find this interesting and entertaining. Carlos?
All right, well, thank you so much, everyone, for being here. It's truly a pleasure and an honor. And I'm extremely excited to share liquid analytics with all of you. You know, and, you know, we think about liquid analytics and the word water, per se. You basically put water in a teacup and it becomes a teacup. You put water in a bottle, it becomes the water, the bottle. So it's flexible, it's always changing, it's not stuck to any one thing. And it's extremely powerful because it can drip, it can just stream, or it can crash, you know. And these are the words of the great Bruce Lee. But that's when we think about liquid analytics, is it's the fact that it's always moving, it's always changing, and it's based on science, really the science of timing. But let me show you this right here. You know, Theo Epstein right here just came on to say that this is a level playing field right now, right? I mean, where we're at in analytics right now, really, where is the next advantage? Everyone is doing the same thing, right? So it's very hard to actually gain an advantage if all 30 teams in the major leagues are gathering data and just going off of the same template, you know? And this is where liquid analytics comes in. You've seen me talk about this in the network, right? And the reason why I'm so passionate about it is because I got to experience it myself, all right? I mean, playing in the big leagues for 14 seasons. I, you know, had much success, very grateful for that. I also had many, many failures as well. And I, in 2009, I run into Perry Husband. And let me tell you, I was one of those guys. The same guys you hear about right now that are saying, I don't want to hear anything. Please don't talk to me. Don't confuse me. I just want to go up to the plate, see the ball, and hit it. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to keep on doing what got me here. So why in the world am I going to listen to all this stuff? And I gave that to Perry. So, Perry, I'm sorry about that. But, I mean, I hope you understand. Until quite honestly, when you struggle and there are some pitchers that really give you a lot of trouble, I finally listened. I was like, what do you have to say? I mean, I'm having a tough time here. I was having a pretty good season, and all of a sudden, I'm just falling off the face of the earth. You know, I'm not performing. And we started talking, you know, and it's basically the science behind timing. Hitting is timing. You know, when pitchers miss bats, it has a lot to do with timing. Bat contact, it's about timing. And when I started listening, it started resonating with me. You know, and I honestly went off. All of a sudden in August 5th, I remember the date, like it was yesterday, hit a big home run. And I was like, wow, I think I got this. I got it. And
I was able to have some success against John Lester with 7 homers in 58 plate appearances. Those are the numbers, but why I had success is key. Lester was and still is one of the most dominant left-handed pitchers in the game. However, utilizing effective velocity, I learned what I needed to do to increase my chances to succeed against one of the league's best. Liquid Analytics bridges the gap between analytics and application. At game speed, this is the new frontier in terms of gaining a competitive advantage.
Sorry, I didn't know I was going to start playing that quickly. It scared me. Basically, that's what ended up happening. So I started working with Perry, and Perry's giving me all this information on timing. And this is measured. This is to the T. So I was able to understand hitters, pitchers, just like Lester, that is one of the best pitchers in the game. And I'm a left-handed hitter. I'm supposed to have difficulty against guys that good, especially lefty on lefty. And it just opened up my eyes. And guys, it's like blinders were taken off. And all of a sudden, I could see. And I was like, wow, I was blind, and now I can see. And immediately, I was definitely intrigued by it. I just wanted more of it. And every single night, I would have a plan, an EV plan against these pitchers. And I went off in August, and I could arguably, you know, I was the best hitter in baseball during that time that Perry and I were working together and designing these EV plans precisely on who we were facing. All right? So against Verlander, against Roy Halladay, against John Lester, and it was like if I diffused the problem, I diffused a bomb. All of a sudden, they weren't so tricky anymore. I could see clearly. I was now, no, they didn't have me any longer confused. And I was giving myself the best chance to actually succeed. All right, so that's why I'm so passionate about it, is because I lived it. I experienced it, and I was skeptical at the beginning. I didn't want any numbers. Don't come with numbers to me. I'm a ball player, man. I just grip it and rip it, and I'm good, and I trust my talent. Well, it is precisely because of this, I say, ignorance in a sense, and this overconfident, that some pitchers today have success. It's because as hitters, we don't like to change. All right, so I'm going to go to the next slide. I hope it's not sound. Let's see. Wait. All right, we're good. And this is what happened, guys. Like, I increased, my batting average went up, my strikeouts went down. This is just a small period of time when I was working with Perry. And I was already established big leaguer. You know, my home runs, I was just cranking home runs because I was squaring pitches up, hitting the ball hard. Often, more often than not. Just even my outs were hard. You see my chase rate as well went down in that period of time. So ever since then, I've been fascinated with it. And even after I got done playing, I just kept on studying it. And this is the real deal. This is the truth, you know. These are the keys, guys. You know, the keys to successful pitching. This slide right here, if we go forward, we see that in order for you to, based on effective velocity, if you make pitches hard to identify, that's one of the keys for you to become a successful pitcher. Take away the reaction time. Create larger velocity spreads between pitches. Very important. Eliminate the predictability. Adjust at game speed. That's the liquid part. You have to be able to do that. You know, but if you understand the truth and the science behind it, it's actually very fluid. It's not like you're going to stop in the middle of the game and calculate, do a formula in your mind. This is very important because it's great to have so much data and have all the calculations. But let's be frank. In game speed and when the game is on the line, we don't have any time to think. There is no time to think. We have to flow. We have to make decisions based on what we are all about, what we understand is important, and what we have practiced. Many times, we practice, you know, now that I see it, we practice the wrong thing. I know personally I did. You keep on practicing the wrong thing. So when pitchers were thrown in the areas where I was not strong at, I would make an out. Not because I didn't have the ability, but rather because I was not practicing correctly. So I was barking up the wrong tree. This is what it's all about, guys. Just to explain to you what effective velocity is like. You know, I love this analogy right here. You see the hitter's attention. There is such a thing. I went up to the plate always focused in an area. Always. And always in a timing and with rhythm in one area. And if the pitcher threw it in that area, I was very strong in that area. But if he didn't, then I would be weaker. My chances of success would decrease. And this is what this analogy here is great. You got the hitter's attention. I'm going to send out two receivers, right? Only 10 yards apart. And there is a defensive back covering them. Well, the defensive back, at 10 yards apart, I could be in the middle, and I can defend to the left and defend to the right, and I can cover them both with ease. I don't even have to make a decision. I just wait. I see what's happening. I can pick this pass right here, and I can pick this pass over here and defend them both. Now, if I send the two receivers 20 yards apart, and I'm the defender, I'm going to have to make a decision. There's no way I can physically, humanly possible, there's no way humanly possible that I can cover both receivers. No way. I have to go towards one or the other. And sometimes, you know, analytics helps us with that because we know the tendencies. Okay, this quarterback likes to throw to the right or to the left, so I'm going to start to lean, but I cannot cover them both. All right? And this is what happens with pitching, right? Pitchers usually throw the equivalent of sending receivers just too close together. So as a hitter, I can have my attention in the middle, my timing in the middle, and I can hit both pitches. That's exactly what happens with the fastball away. I'm a left-handed hitter. A fastball away has the same timing as a slider in. Reason being, the contact points are different. A fastball away, if I'm ideally going to make good contact with it, I have to wait until it gets a little bit deeper. So I hit it back here. A slider that's coming inside, I hit it out in front. So the distance from the pitcher to the contact point is shorter. So those two pitches are exactly the same timing. So if I'm dancing to the same speed, I'll be able to cover them both. Just like the analogy of the receiver, the receivers being too close together and then the defender being able to pick and cover both of them. All right? But what about if this happens? How about if I send out the two receivers down straight at the defender, and then they split, and they go one to the other side, the other one goes to the right, the other one goes to the left, and now they're 30 yards apart, they started coming at me. As a defender, you're going to be puzzled. You're like, there's nothing I can do. I don't even know what to do. It's coming at me, they look the same. That's exactly what an EV tunnel is. That's what tunneling is all about. And just like Vince mentioned, Perry's been talking about tunneling for a long time. Long time. It was the first one to bring that to light. And it's part of the EV, effective velocity concepts, and how the effective velocity pitch sequencing and engineering and pitch design works. He's been talking about pitch design for quite a long time as well. First one, a pioneer in that field. So this is ideal if you're a pitcher. You would send out your two receivers down the same line, and they would split, and as a defender, as a hitter, you could not cover both. Impossible. That's the equivalent of an up-and-in fastball, and I'm late on it, right? And it's extremely hard. I can't get to it. It's hard to get my hands to the baseball and get the barrel to the baseball, and then the pitcher throws the next pitch, split off of exactly the same line. They look exactly the same to me, and yet they are so far apart. So far apart in timing. I'm going to be way late on one and really early on the other. Next slide. This is great right here. How do I press play? So right here, if you see, let's see if I do. How do you place play here? I wanted to play this video. But right here, he is at 0.41 seconds. Maybe I do it right here. Yeah, let me see if I can figure this out. So Bryant, we could all agree Bryant is a star, you know. But Bryant usually is at 0.4
second base pass.
1 second.
Bryant.
0.41 seconds. 0.41 seconds. 0.41 seconds. He's making contact with his pitch.
Right,
0.417 seconds, right? Every single one of those pitches. Can you play that again? What'd you do?
It's magic.
What you do? Watch
second
this.
Base back.
All these pitches, Bryant swung like at exactly the same time.
It's kind of.
And he couldn't hit any of them.
A little flare in a shallow right field, and
he didn't hit any of them well. You know, he made contact, but he didn't hit him well at all because the pitcher did not cooperate with him. In other words, the pitcher did not throw it into his parameters, the parameters that he set, that he previously set, his hitter's attention. So if the pitch does not go there, you're making it extremely hard for Bryant to square up a pitch. Now think about championships hinging on this knowledge and a pitcher on the mound knowing this, knowing that he can apply this science. Well, you go home being a champion, it could be the difference between you just sitting at home watching other teams play. If you are an owner, what would this knowledge mean? You know, you win a World Series or you go home early. I'm going to take you to the next slide, but this is incredible. He kept on swinging all those pitches. He is an athlete, an elite athlete, one of the best hitters in the game. He sees the pitch, and he still swings at 0.417 seconds. All those pitches were exactly the same timing. That's why he couldn't hit them. Next slide. So just to illustrate that, click. I really need some help trying to manage this. Okay, so how do we place play again? There we go. Okay, I see what you're doing. All right, so guys, if you watch this, same idea. He's swinging exactly the same way, all right? Same way. And I paused it right here because you see the changeup out in front. These are three pitches. We overlapped them, okay? The changeup is the one you see the low and in the front. That's the changeup. Look at the barrel. Look at the fastball knee-high inside, how late he is. Look at the fastball up and in, how late he is. Yet, he's swinging exactly the same, pretty close. Exactly the same because he has that neurological pathway that it's so hard to break because all we do since we are kids, it's swing, and we're taught the same way. We practice the same way. And neurological pathways are extremely difficult to break. A hitter really doesn't even – he just goes out there with this type of plan. That's what we call a hitter's attention. If a pitcher knew this, pitcher could exploit this. But as of right now, it's happened randomly. Most of the time, happened randomly. Pitchers stumble into these type of sequences. It's not by design because they don't understand the science. Hitter – all those pitches look exactly the same to him, yet he's not close at making contact with any of them. Next slide. Just want to show you Blake Snell. Blake Snell was, hey guys, Blake Snell still throws 96. He threw 96 last year too. I think he gained 1 mile per hour actually last year, to be honest and accurate. Guess what? He was a monster last year. You're like, how in the world did that happen? Did he learn a new pitch? Did he, what? He's still the same guy, except his strategy has changed. This is overlapping. I'm overlapping these three pitches right here. Perfect tunnel coming out of his hand. And a tunnel, it's not just release point. A tunnel, you ride that line to, you know, at least a third of the way to home plate. And then all those pitches split. They go different directions. Yet to Bryce Harper, one of the best hitters in the world, right, they look the same. They look the same, yet they have different timings. All right, so that he's in the middle. He's doing what that defender did, in the middle, yet all those pitches are too far apart. He cannot cover them. And we could all argue that Bryce Harper has one of the, you know, athletic ability. You know, that's not his problem. Another example here of a nice tunnel, fastball up and in. You see the three lines, it's hard sometimes to see, but these are all examples of how you have combinations of pitches that are impossible for the hitter to see and to hit. This is utilizing science to your advantage. This is liquid analytics. Right here, you see the high fastball paired up with an off-speed pitch. They look the same exact thing to the hitter, to Bryce Harper, by the way, again. and yet he's in between. He's late on the fastball. He's early on the off speed. Very, very difficult. All right, so this slide right here, the same way. I mean, look at that. They're all coming out of the same exact tunnel, or pretty close. And this is the good thing about it. It's like for pitchers, they don't even have to be perfect. All they have to be is just around the area, and it still makes an effect, has an effect. Having this type of information is priceless, understanding this. EV pitch design. This is liquid analytics. It's the difference between being a champion and just saying, oh, we were so close. The Dodgers have been falling short over the last few World Series, and we all know that it's very difficult to get to that point. Blake Snell, if you look at him from 2016-17 season, he just increased or decreased the reaction time, decreased the reaction time for hitters on his fastball. So 2016-17, hitters had 0.418 seconds to react. In 2018, he's a Cy Young and had an unbelievable season. We could all agree to that. He reduced the reaction time on his fastball by 3.38. That means a lot. That's the difference between a home run and a swing and a miss. That's the difference between a foul ball or a line drive. That's the difference between winning a game, possibly, or losing it. You know, Barry Seto in 2005, you know, that's why I told you that Barry's been at it for a while. In 2005, Barry Seto was having a tough time. 2005, he comes over to Perry, and they started to work together. They designed plans like this. This is Barry Seto's EV pitch design. And he goes on, of course, to have a superb season. There was a period of time where he won 20 games in a row that there was just impossible to hit him. He was giving up 3 hard hit balls a game, right, in that 20-game span with EV pitch design. And he used to always talk about fits, which is fearless in the zone. And it was a Perry's saying. And the only reason that he was fearless in the zone is because he understood effective velocity, how to be liquid. And this is where that concept of being an artist versus an analyst is very important, okay? We don't want to think as athletes. We don't want to be up there calculating. As a matter of fact, you don't have much time. You get the ball back. If you're a pitcher, you got to throw the next pitch. There's a pitch clock that's getting implemented right now. We can't take our time and start calculating in our head. So this needs to be liquid, needs to be fluid, quickly and effective. So that's the difference between an artist and an analyst. We want to be artists as athletes. We want to be able to utilize information on the go. We don't want to have to stop to think, all right? And one of the things that Seto told Perry was, I don't want to analyze. I just want to be an artist up there. And I have this video right here that I wanted to show you. All right. There you go. I'm learning. So, guys, just about being an artist. You throw your first brushstroke, first pitch is out there. Now, because of the reaction, right, the reaction that you see the hitter have, or that the pitch, the effect that the pitch had on the hitter, well, now you can make the next decision on what pitch to throw based on what you just saw. You're flowing. You're not just still thinking. Analysis per paralysis. This is just a basic understanding, and all of a sudden you start to paint a picture based on science. I mean, everybody's puzzled because right now they have no clue what he's doing. Like, what is he doing? I can't believe he's putting this together. No one can figure it out. But he knows, but he's coming from a place of truth. He understands the truth behind what really happens. It's all about timing. And, of course, he's going to paint that perfect picture that he wants. As a hitter, as a pitcher, that's exactly what you want. You just want to be flowing just like this. One brushstroke, you see that, then you know what to do next. And then what to do next. Everything is feeding off the last pitch you threw. It's flowing. It's going. It's liquid. And I'll let you enjoy this little part right here.
All right, it's coming down to the wire. 15 seconds, D.
Come on.
Go, D. Westry. Come on. 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's in for D. Westry.
Okay. There we go.
And that's just incredible. And that's exactly what happened to Barry Seto. Barry Seto goes out there in 2005, puts up an incredible year. just like that, when he flips it over as a masterpiece, and he goes on and signs a huge deal with the San Francisco Giants. And it's all about EV pitch design, about being fluid. One brushstroke leads to the next and to the next. And he did not want to think. That's music to my ears, because ultimately, what I want all this data gathering that we have going on right now, we've gotten really good as an industry gathering data and information. But in reality, all that information, quite frankly, at times can cloud us. Because at the end of the day, what's key? It's applying it. So we're all pretty good about finding the what. Well, frankly, sometimes we try to find out the wrong what, and we end up on top of a building. It's just to find out that was the wrong building to begin with. You know, so it's very important to make sure that we're seeking truth first. And timing, in baseball, timing is that truth. You know, Malcolm Gladwell in his book Blink, you know, told a story about a hospital that was receiving a lot of patients with heart problems. And they were taking so long. They were overwhelmed with patients coming in. And they were taking so long in diagnosing the diagnosis of what was truly happening until finally they came just to just narrow it down to four data points. And as patients came in, with those four data points, they were able to immediately understand what was truly happening, who was really at risk and who wasn't, and who they could send home and who had to stay. This is crucial because there's a difference between the true, right, what's true, and all the data that we gather, we really could say that it is true. But in reality, what we need to be seeking is the truth. It's different. Timing is the truth, and that's what liquid analytics, that's the domain of liquid analytics. You know, what happens to, what you know, when bad things happen to good pitchers, Brian Kenny, I love that line right there, because you're like, okay, what happened to Kershaw in the World Series? He's such a great pitcher. How come, you know, he lost? You know, what happened to this pitcher, that pitcher? You know, this guy's a great guy. Well, great pitcher. Well, how come he's not performing? Well, guys, many times, you know, we talk about Lester. Lester was hitting his spots. He was hitting that low and away dotted fastball that he wanted, yet I hit it for a home run. So Lester goes home and says, I hit my spot. Yeah, but I hit it for a home run. I knew something that he didn't. I was already hunting him instead of me being the hunted. I became the predator instead of just being his prey. Very important. And all that had to do just with understanding timing and the science behind it. All right, so effective velocity was the primary reason for teams losing in the postseason. In 2017 postseason game winners, 34, the game-winning plays, the pitches, 34 of 38 were at-risk pitches in EV terms. So they were not the right pitch to be thrown if we were looking at it through the effective velocity microscope. And all nine elimination games were pitches that shouldn't have been thrown. What is that? How much is that? How valuable is that, right? If I could avoid making the wrong pitch and giving myself the best chance to succeed, it could be the difference between a championship, as you can see, or not, or going home early. You know, and this is the way it happens. Back-to-back, hard hit balls happen this way. Back-to-back pitches within 6 EV miles per hour, that's when you send out those receivers too close together. That's how hard hit balls happen, because I can cover 2 pitches at once. Back-to-back pitches, then 20% of it pitches thrown into the hitter's attention. You saw Bryant and where his hitter's attention was. If the pitcher were to throw a slider at 87 that just hangs a little bit, it would have gone right into his timing. That's an at-risk pitch. That's throwing a pitch into the hitter's attention. On that video that I showed you, the pitches weren't thrown into his attention, so he couldn't hit them. No EV tunnel. All right, that's another way that it happens. And then the last 10%, 10% is earned, meaning, hey, man, that was just good hitting. That was just an incredible athletic ability to react. You know, I would like those odds. If I could avoid 90% of hard contact, that's something that I'm going to be paying attention to. And the EV microscope predicted all hard contact almost exactly. So this is what we predicted on the left. EV says 50% of back-to-back pitches with E. I just read that to you on the left. And then you see that on the right, this is what actually happened in the 2017 postseason. We said this before on the left, and then sure enough, pretty close, as you can see. Only 12% of the hard hit balls in the postseason in 2017 were earned. Everything else was because somehow, some way, the pitcher aided the batter. In other words, he contributed to his own demise. That's ignorance, in a sense. And to me, it's unacceptable. But what do we know, right? I mean, we're just going about our business the way we've been taught. But this is real and extremely valuable. Right here, we're talking about not a bad tunnel. This pitch is at wrist. Look at that. Look how there's no tunnel there. The curveball popped above the fastball. Fastball away. Then a slider up on top of the zone. Curveball top of the zone. It popped immediately. The hitter, Bregman, was able to pick it up. That's a very at-risk pitch. That pitch gets crushed. That was a postseason home run. Then you have the fastball away right here, four-seam fastball away. And then here comes the 85 miles per hour cutter. That pitch gets crushed because that's two pitches within the same timing. Threw it right into his timing. You don't do that. That's another way hard hit balls happen. And Altuve just jumped all over it. That's an at-risk pitch. Another huge hit in the postseason. And look, these are the...
You're going to talk
I
about
don't,
that.
I don't, but you all do remember that play, right? Kershaw throws it. It was pitching, and the pitcher... What was his name? I don't remember correctly. Hits that big home run.
Woodruff.
Right, hits that big home run. If you see that sequence, it was the most at-risk pitch he could have possibly thrown in his life. And yet, that's the pitch he went to. Now, we're all going to sit here and say, Woodruff, wow, what a, he hit Kershaw. But in reality, if we're going to remove our emotion from it and be objective, Kershaw threw that pitch right into his bat. As a matter of fact, it was like three pitches in a row where Woodruff fouls one off. And then he's like, oh, I joke about it now, but I'm like, and Kershaw's like, oh, you didn't hit that? Let's try it again. I'm going to throw it again in the same spot. Here we go. Boom, foul ball. Okay, no. I'm going to do it again. Stay right there. I'm going to hit the bat. I promise. I'll hit your bat. Boom, home run. That's the way it seemed almost from the EV perspective. And guess what? That hurt the Los Angeles Dodgers, you know, in that particular game, and it could cost them the postseason and a World Series title. Well, right here, this in particular, I wanted to show you the fastball usage by playoff teams, all right? Well, if you look at it, they've been racing on the top, all those guys, Red Sox, Astros, Brewers, Indians, Yankees, Dodgers, they have elevated their fastballs slightly more than other teams. As you can see, the ones that went home early are living down in the bottom of the zone. And this is just part of EV pitch design, part of it. And this, they are stumbling upon them because they collect the data. They understand, wait a second, when the pitchers are up in the zone, they're not hitting them. Okay, then we should throw it up there. Well, that's the what. The only problem is that they're focusing on the result, right, based on historical data, but they don't know why it happens or how it happens. And the why and the how is the domain of liquid analytics. Because if you know the why it happens and the how it happens, then you can move with it. You can repeat it. You can provoke something desirable to happen. And at the same time, you can avoid something that you do not desire from happening. You know, and you can see right here, Tim Hires, the Red Sox hitting coach, who has the most potent offense in the game of baseball, he's an effective velocity disciple. As a matter of fact, he was in the first research and experiments about timing that Perry and Tim Hires worked on together. And it's no coincidence that, you know, he's able to utilize all this information and the science to help the Red Sox be an absolute devastating force offensively. I mean, that was a historic season that they put forth. And you can say, well, they have a lot of talent. Yeah, but they also have effective velocity. And the scary part is that it's just tip of the iceberg because there's still a lot there. Well, they led all of baseball in most offensive categories. And then if we're going to go from the best offensive ball club in the major leagues to the best pitching ball club in the major leagues, Brent Strom. We're going to sit here and start looking at guys that have just turned their careers around and were having incredible years. You can see what Brent says about EV and how he personally worked with Perry Husband creating EV plans for his pitchers. You know, and then you see guys like the newcomer, Gerrit Cole, just came over and all of a sudden was unhittable. I mean, we all remember this time where we were like, wow, Gerrit Cole. I mean, he was a pretty good pitcher, but all of a sudden, no one can even touch him. There was some EV pitch assigned behind that because Brent Strom went and had Perry create some EV pitch designs, and he was lights out. And the crazy part is that it was just the tip of the iceberg because a little bit of information, since no one else is onto this, and certainly the hitters are not, puts you at a ridiculous advantage over hitters. And that's why Gerrit Cole makes this incredible leap, you know. So at the end of the day, when you look at the science and the application of the science, which is even more valuable than the data itself at the end of the day, it comes down to this. It's like, what do you want to do? You want to take the red pill or the blue pill? You have a choice. You know, and the blue pill is great. It says, you know, it's the herd is going in one direction. And, you know, we are getting extremely good at collecting data. We have incredible technology to collect data, data that at times it's not even necessary, of course, and also data that we could really take advantage of it if you go after it. It's about how to apply it. But in reality, we just stay in that world. Or we go to the essential core, right? The core of the truth of it all, which is the red pill. And now we understand what truly happens at contact and what's all about timing. You know, personally, I took the red pill, and now I've been ruined because now every single time I watch a baseball game, I'm watching it through the lens of effective velocity and liquid analytics. And I sometimes, I scratch my head at some of the things that happen and how teams miss out on the postseason based on throwing the least, let's just say the worst pitch you could possibly throw in that moment. And that, as an owner, will cost you millions of dollars. If I'm an owner and I miss the postseason because of one bad decision that I could have avoided just if I knew, if I had this access to this, it would bother me. It really would. 2008, I went to the World Series with the Tampa Bay Rays, and we lost to the Philadelphia Phillies. And I played for 14 seasons in the major leagues, and I only was able to play in one World Series. It's not easy to get up there. So once you get an opportunity, you want to make sure you seize it. And it works beautifully on even more so. For example, Bryant can sit and do exactly the same for 162 games. Stay right there at 0.417 seconds all day long. And he's an athlete. He has some ability to adjust as well within those parameters. And if pitchers throw it into that, his domain of competence, because that's what it is, his domain of competence, well, he's going to hit. And at the end of the year, he's going to have 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, and we're all going to say, that's a pretty good season. But now, if you reduce it to just a short series, a game, and a bat, game seven, game winning run at second base, and I am the pitcher on the mound, I'm not throwing a pitch at 0.417 seconds to Bryant. But I know that. Usually the pitchers out there don't. So that's what effective velocity and liquid analytics is all about. If any of you have any questions, I would be more than glad to answer them. Thank you so much for the opportunity for allowing me to present. Thank you, guys.
Carlos, talk about how when you know how to how you're going to die.
Yes.
Talk about the mindset of that.
You know, Vince and I have had conversations about that. It's like when I went up to the plate, you know, and I was equipped with effective velocity, which unfortunately was not enough time with Perry, the time that I could work with him. But when I did, I went up there, and I knew exactly how I was going to die. You know, basically, I knew exactly how I was going to fail. I knew what my risks were, and that just lifted so much off my shoulders, the pressure. See, before I would go up to the plate, and it would be like walking into an ambush. I had no idea where the enemy was going to come from, if we're going to talk military terms, right? And who does that? What army goes into a place and says, I have no clue what am I going to get myself into. I'm just going to react to whatever comes my way. It doesn't even matter how powerful you are or how good you are. What you always want to do is make sure that you put yourself in a position where you can succeed, in the best position possible to succeed. So when I would go up to the plate, I would know exactly what pitches were going to give me trouble, and I would make peace with that. Just knowing that was remarkably a release of stress as a hitter. It allowed my focus. At the same time, I also knew that did not happen often, because the way we were setting up plans through effective velocity was putting me on a place where I knew I was going to get a lot of pitches to hit. They were going to be on the timing that I was setting my parameters at. And when I did get the pitch that I was looking for, I would be on it. See, I was trying to be 100% on time. And when you're 100% on time, most of the time you will have, well, your 100% swing, your best swing. So imagine if you can go your whole entire season trying to collect as many 100% on time, 100% swing as you possibly can. One of the things that helped me is knowing what my weaknesses were. You know, how I was going to die. I knew exactly how I was going to die in every single at bat. Against Holiday, against Lester, against Verlander. I knew that if Verlander threw the up and in curveball, you know, I was going to have a very hard time laying off of it. If he threw it at the top of the zone and into my feet, you know, that was okay with me. He never did it. You know, he just went fastball, middle up, away. And then, you know, work the changeup out over the zone and work a backdoor curveball. And I knew that. I'm like, okay, if he throws a curveball up in the zone and that's where I'm looking, I'm probably going to swing at it. I'm okay with that. And that really released me. It really helped me.
Yeah. And also talk about Rivera, how you made the adjustment to be able to hit Mariano.
You know, Mariano Rivera, we've heard it so many times. That says, man, this is unbelievable. Hall of Famer with only one pitch. In reality, Mariano had six different pitches. You're like, what? He had a cutter. It's like, yeah, but Mariano utilized his cutter in such a way that he was able to give the batter six different timings with pretty much two different looks. He utilized two different looks. It's not bad. Six pitches that I compare into two different tunnels, and each tunnel is giving me a purpose, right? It's actually executing a purpose. That is just absolutely nasty. Well, against Mariano, one of the greatest games in my career. It was opening day in Tampa Bay against the Yankees, and I hit a grand slam against
Sabathia
to open up the game, and then I walked it off against Mariano. Well, I had a plan against Mariano Rivera, as I did against Sabathia as well, an EV plan. And against Mariano, we knew that Mariano loved the backdoor cutter, and he did it. He threw it as a freeze. The problem with that is that the cutter, if I trust my eyes, it's hard to hit because you are going to see the ball, but by the time you're able to get the barrel into the zone, the ball is no longer there. It's gone. As a matter of fact, we lose. You know, as we track pitches, we talk about visual. You know, if you think about how it works, the visual, our eyes, and how we assimilate what we're seeing. In reality, it's impossible to follow a cutter into his break. But we knew he threw a back door. So when the time came, you know, we had two strikes. I knew he came and freeze hitters with a back door cutter. I knew that he was going to throw it based on effective velocity and the data that we had gathered and the application of that data. So I set my parameters, my dance, my rhythm, to that timing. I knew exactly what it was. And then he threw the cutter away. Now, to my eyes, the ball looked like it was going to go into the other batter's eye, batter's box, right? So I'm standing here as a left-handed hitter, and I'm like, okay, this pitch, really, to my eyes, looks like it's going to be in the other batter's box. So if what is my eyes are telling me, you need to take it. It's a ball. But I knew, because of the signs, that the ball was going to break into the strike zone. It had no hump, zero hump. All you saw was a straight line, and then when you swung, it was gone. I swung to the spot. I swung to the spot where I knew the ball was going to break. But I had the perfect timing. I knew the timing. I knew the dance to it, the rhythm to it. The ball broke into my barrel, and I hit it off the left center field wall. We won the game. Now, that was fascinating to me because it was the first time that I got a hit off Mariano, by the way. My first hit. Because every single time I was trying to hit, be in between and trying to react to the cutter. Impossible. Impossible. That's why he's so good. He had everyone in the middle, and yet everyone was late to everything he threw. And then when you paid attention to the inside cutter, you're like, man, I need to get the head out right here. He threw the backdoor cutter, who looked absolutely horrible to a hitter, especially after getting fed into your brain. There's a visual hole that happens. There's also a neurological effects that happens. He grabbing the ball. All this stuff I'm talking about is effective velocity. And then he backdoors the cutter, and you can't swing. It's impossible for a hitter to swing. Impossible. Because there was a visual hold the previous four pitches, you know, and as a hitter, it is impossible for you to even trick your mind unless you know what I knew. Well, that day, through the backdoor cutter, I hit it off the wall, we won the ball game, and it was one of the greatest games I ever had, and I was like, Mariano, see you later, I don't ever want to face you again. As a matter of fact, we would be better now, obviously, now that I knew how it works, you know.
Talk about Halliday. You've had interesting experiences with him and how you made adjustments.
You know, Roy Halliday, goodness, I couldn't hit him. I just couldn't. I didn't know what the problem was. And this is what happens with hitters. All of us, we have the way we go about our business. We just stand in the box, we hit, we swing the same way. We try to groove a certain swing. We try to groove a certain timing. You know, that's the way we've been taught since we were kids. So with Roy Halliday, I would go up there. I'm like, I'm ready. I'm going to go see the ball and hit it because I'm that good. I'm an elite athlete, and my hands are the quickest in the world, you know, and I have all this confidence, you know. But yet I couldn't get Halliday. And Halliday used to throw four pitches that looked exactly the same, exactly the same. And they all did different things. So I was always in the middle. I was late on the fastball. I was early on the off-speed. I was under. I was over. I was never on it. And then he had this pitch that if he had you distracted, you know, like magicians are so good. So good. Because what they do is they distract you with all their tricks up here. And if you are looking at the diversion, they flip the card with the left hand. But you never see it because your focus is up here. You know, I'm going to go on a tangent real quick. But I was in Vegas and I'm sitting there. I'm watching a magician. This is obviously after, you know, effective velocity. I kind of knew all these things. And I'm sitting there. The magician, this street magician, has a crowd of people. And he's making tricks left and right and people going crazy. I stood in the front and I just crossed my arms. And I just said, I'm going to look at his left hand. I don't care what he says, what joke he cracks. I'm going to look at his left hand. And he was doing all his movements with his right, moving around. But his left hand, I'm watching it. Now, he's looking at me. And I caught, for the first time, this guy was unbelievable. He had a bucket full of dollar bills and $10 bills. People were just giving him money. For the first time, I see the trick. I see exactly how he was tricking everybody. And the reason why he was tricking everybody is because of the diversion, right? So eventually, the guy comes up to me and bows out to me and says, you need to leave now. So I had to leave. I'm like, the street is free. I can stand wherever I want. All right? But I'm going to leave. I'll leave because I don't want no trouble. I'll let you, you know, make your money. But I saw his trick. That's what pitchers are doing, whether they know it or not. you know, I think Holiday was very advanced in the way he pitched. He knew, he had a pretty good idea intuitively or, through trial and error. All right. And I'll speak about that in a second. But he was really good at that. And he would give me a diversion. I would be in the middle of everything. My eyes would be somewhere in the middle of the plate. My timing would be somewhere in the middle. And then he would come with a comebacker fastball that started at my ribs. So here's I am getting fed all this right down the middle. I'm early, I'm late, I'm early, late, over, under. And I have no idea how to square this guy up because everything looked the same. And then he comes and throws a fastball right at my ribs. So what do you think I did when he threw the fastball right at my ribs? I went like this. I don't want that ball to hit me. You know, I'm trying to defend myself. And the ball will come back and break. And he would catch the inside corner. And I would strike out every single time. And I couldn't understand why that was happening to me. I was entertained by all the diversion. And then he came and surprised me and froze me with that. Well, we saw through that. Well, after effective velocity, we're talking to Perry, and he's like, watch this. This is what's happening. These are the tunnels that he's using. You cannot go to that diversion. You have to get away from the diversion. And now all of a sudden, I go up against Holiday, and I was so excited. This is the first time I understood the diversion and understood the plan of what Holiday was doing. Since that day forward, well, that day I hit a home run. Got the comebacker. He never hit a left-handed hitter with a comeback, with an inside fastball. Never did. So if the ball was coming at me, it was only an illusion. Or let's just say it might have been coming at me, but it was going to break out back over the plate. You know, you take that risk, and sure enough, hit a home run. And from that point forward, no longer his diversion mattered to me. I owned him after that. I crushed Holiday after that moment. Where before it was the other way around. I didn't change. Same swing. Holiday didn't change. He was still the same pitcher. But my strategy changed. And now the result was totally different. You know, what I was going to say about diversion and how it is important to make sure that, that we pay attention to the truth, and not to worry all the noise. Sometimes that's what we get bogged down with, just too much noise. And as players and hitters and pitchers and athletes, what we want to do is to make sure that we have a clear mind so we can go out there and perform and be artists and not be bogged down with so much information.
Well, I think we're just about at the end of our time. So thanks to Carlos and thanks to Perry for being up here. Terrific.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
This is yours, right?